You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And this is episode 308 of the Columbia Calling podcast. And let me just say a huge thank you to all of you out there who have, well, first of all, sponsored us on the Patreon campaign. You can find us, Columbia Calling, on the Patreon campaign. It's on my blog. It's on the Facebook page. And this is helping us pay our costs each month. And of course, I hope to increase the income through that site to be able to improve the Columbia Calling podcast and through sound and then through social work and so on. So please, you can pledge as little as $2 a month. And I'm particularly pleased at how this podcast ended 2019 on such a strong note with great interviews and has started 2020 in the same vein. Thank you to Gabriel Torres and his talk about the Caminos Reales around Colombia. Amazing, amazing possibilities in Santander and definitely worth listening to if you're going to go to Barichara and travel in Colombia. And then, of course, last week's show with Dr. Julia Zulva talking about gender issues and the trials and tribulations and dangers that are taking place in the precarious peace that we are living at this moment in Colombia and the reconfiguration of the armed conflict and how this affects women. And so I'm particularly pleased with this. It's been a really flattering to know that you've been with me almost 6 years now, those of you out there from the very beginning. But we continue in this strong vein. And this week, we are taking a slight change in course and we'll be having a more humorous episode with Jim Davies, or Jim El Peligroso Davies. And when he talks to us and regales us with anecdotes of some of his scrapes in Cali. And I won't get into that anymore because it's all in segment three. Right now, over to Columbia Reports with Adrian Alsimer. Thank you.
My name is Adrian Alsimer, and this is the news for Columbia Calling for January 21, 2020. The Supreme Court is heading towards judicial standstill, raising fears that President Ivan Duque could assume absolute power. According to Supreme Court President Alvaro Garcia, a group of magistrates has been blocking the replacement of retiring colleagues. Consequently, the court will lose its ability to vote in magistrates or a new prosecutor general on February 27. Centrist Senator Roy Barreras warned press that this would allow Duque to declare a national emergency. This would allow him to try to push through his party's plans to replace both the judicial and legislative branches, Barreras warned. The government has granted top positions to family members of a corrupt former official who allegedly helped mediate a $1.5 million contribution to the ruling party from Brazilian engineering firm Odebrecht. Journalists have found that the administration of President Ivan Duque granted the positions to three family members of Daniel Garcia, currently a director of the far-right Democratic Center Party. The most shocking of appointments is that of Garcia's brother Luis Fernando, whose apparent front company received money from Odebrecht in 2012. He has been appointed the regional chief of road infrastructure agency in Bias in the Valle del Cauca department. The prosecution will revise the homes, cars and cell phones of all Supreme Court magistrates amid a growing spying scandal. According to Noticias Uno, the magistrate investigating former President Alfredo Uribe is no longer allowed to use the internet at home after multiple attempts to intercept his Wi-Fi traffic. The investigation follows mounting evidence that the army has been illegally wiretapping the court, journalists, and politicians, and forwarding information to Uribe's party. The Human Rights Office of the Organization of American States called on the authorities to carry out, I quote, an exhaustive and independent investigation into the scandal. Colombia's ambassador to Washington, D.C. resigned 2 months after he was recorded bad-mouthing the State Department and his own government. Outgoing Ambassador Francisco Santos, a cousin of former President Juan Manuel Santos, will reportedly be given a different position. Anti-government protests resumed today after waning down during the holiday season. Protest organizers have been meeting to define a strategy to increase pressure on the administration of President Iván Duque to negotiate their demands. The government has so far refused to negotiate despite the plummeting approval rating of the president. That's the end of Colombia Report's news bulletin. Now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCall.
This is segment 3 of the Colombia Calling podcast, episode 308. And we're here on the line to a very special guest who's out there in Cali. His name's Jim Davies. In fact, he was on the Colombia Calling podcast, episode 79, back in December 2004. And I was in Mompox and he was in Cali and the connection was dreadful. So we missed a lot of the humor that Jim was able to bring to the podcast that time. And well, let me give him a little bit of a background to give you guys a little bit of a background to Jim. He's originally from the UK, from the southeast of England. He's was the Sunday Times photo editor, so, you know, big deal. Moved to Colombia in 2009, and well, for me, you know, one of his greatest achievements is being best buddies with Tino Asprilla, and of course having used the same changing room as Dania, who was the high-end cool girl, I think, was the best way we could describe her, who got the U.S. Secret Service agents into trouble in Cartagena back in 2012, I want to say. So anyway, Jim, welcome back on Colombia Calling.
Thank you for having me, Richard.
You're most welcome. Now, rather than talk about your past conquests and your past, you know, let's say these amazing stories, unless you want to dip into them, you've opened up a curry house in Cali. How did this come about? I mean, an Englishman in Cali, in San Antonio, in the curry house.
Yes, good question. Well, it's been quite a journey. The whole thing started about 3 years ago with just a shoebox on the counter of the shop opposite where I lived in San Antonio with some takeaway menus in it. And it slowly kind of built up from there. And the more I became disillusioned with the work I was doing, which was kind of working as a freelance writer. I mean, the reason I left the Sunday Times is because I felt a little bit like working for Rupert Murdoch was working for the devil. And I kind of tried to do as many super positive projects as I could when I first came to Colombia. I had a photo agency. I did a big charity art auction, etc. And then one thing led to another, and I ended up working with a publicity agency in Cali. And then as things moved on, eventually I ended up getting jobs like writing blogs for American personal injury lawyers and stuff like that. And I kind of started to get that same feeling again that I'd had when I was at the Sunday Times, but perhaps I needed to be on the other side of the equation. And I'd always been super passionate about food. I'd had lots of Indian friends and Indian girlfriends when I was at university. So I'd had lots of exposure to Indian culture and Indian food. And meanwhile, as the kind of sideline was building up, it just seemed like the right time and the right thing to do to make another major change in my life, do something a little bit crazy and throw myself wholeheartedly into the curry house. So there were various problems with that. One was that I had to change my visa because at the time I was on a visa with my previous girlfriend. My relationship status had changed. That visa was no longer suitable. So it took me about a year and a half to restructure onto an investor's visa. So while some of that was happening, I was kind of running the curry house part-time while doing other stuff. And 2 months ago, I finally got my investment visa and got some employees and put a light outside and kind of went full steam with the curry house. Fantastic. So, you know, there are other Indian restaurants in Cali, but they're kind of what is called fusion. So I try and, even though I put my own twist on things, I try to keep them as authentic as possible in their origins. So we're kind of the only, you know, real curry house in Cali. Lots of people who've never had Indian food before. Lots of people who were really missing Indian food and are really happy it's there. It's been a little bit of a journey of trial and error, but we've kind of finally found our niche and our opening hours, and I've got my good staff and a good manager. So, yeah, it's the beginning of the adventure is here.
This is very cool. 8 weeks in, let's say, after, you know, formalizing everything, 8 weeks in. But how, I mean, a lot of my listeners are all in this, you know, sort of in-between area, this gray zone of wanting to move to Colombia or return to Colombia if they're Colombians living elsewhere and start up a business. I mean, how did you, I mean, let's talk a little bit about that, starting a business, because every expat at some point or other wants to open a bar. They think that's going to be the easiest thing. And now you've opened up a curry house. It's got to be a great deal harder.
I think the most important thing for people when they open a bar is they have to be there, because people, the personality of the bar is very much dependent on the landlord, and people often go because they specifically want to, you know, have a bit of a chit chat or whatever. And the curry house is kind of the same in that it is important that I'm there as much as possible to entertain and to make sure that everything is happening in regards of customer service the way I want it to, because that's a whole nother issue, customer service in Colombia. But at the same time, it's not like running a bar, because I'm doing all the cooking. I'm making the chapatis every day, I'm making the curries every day, I'm boiling the rice every day. I'm doing all the background stuff like the shopping and the stock checking and all that stuff. So that's the main problem I'm having, is trying to work out how I can maximize the time that I give people in the restaurant, as well as doing all the stuff behind the scenes as well. So that's kind of the main difference, I think, between a curry house and a bar, is there's so much more to do behind the scenes in a curry house.
Yeah, now, and you're doing this 7 days a week.
Yeah, for the time being, because, 75% of new restaurants fold within the first 6 months. So I'm very aware of that fact. We're running on very tight budgets. There's, you know, I took on one small investment for this, and everything else I've put in myself and my savings, and, you know, family have helped out, etc. But it's a very, you know, it's a very small business. It's just basically a garage in a very popular part of the tourist district of Cali, San Antonio. What was the question again, Richard?
It's 7 days a week. 7 days a week.
So that's the thing. I've got to keep throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks, because I don't want to be one of those 75% that fold, sitting back thinking, oh, what would have happened if I tried this? What would have happened if I tried that? I mean, the latest thing is that when my friend arrived at Christmas, he very kindly bought a full-sized rubber elephant mask. So on Fridays and Saturdays at 10 o'clock, I'm going to start coming out the kitchen doing the elephant dance and the elephant mask. And that will signify the beginning of Elephant Hour. All of my marketing is done by elephants, because curry is much less sexy than elephants.
Cocktails
will be half price. For example, you know, I've just got to do all this crazy stuff and see what works, see what gets people's attention.
Well, can I ask what an elephant dance is, please?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I haven't even got that far yet. I've got the mask, and the mask is pretty spectacular.
Okay.
And I've got the 7-inch single, because we play vinyl in there, you know, we try and do everything as differently as possible in the curry house. So I've got a 7-inch single of the New York Dolls, Nelly the Elephant. Are you familiar with that?
Nice.
Nelly the Elephant packed her trunk, said goodbye to the circus. Off she went with a trumpety trump. Trump, Trump, Trump. So unfortunately, it's Trump, but, you know, we can rebrand it. And on the trump, you know, out I'll come, and the cheers will go up, and the half-price cocktails will begin. So I, you know, doing a happy hour on a Friday and a Saturday at 10 o'clock instead of a Tuesday and a Wednesday at 6 o'clock, it's kind of crazy, but I'm just trying to get people's attention at this stage as much as anything else.
I think to shake up the way that a happy hour works in Colombia and elsewhere is a good thing, you know, to bring more people in. I think that's definitely, can I just say the one only elephant, the only elephant, let's say, imitation that I knew of, I think, back in my university days was to pull out my pockets and then you unzip your fly, right?
Well, Richard, we await your arrival in the Curry House to see it.
It would be very embarrassing indeed. I'm not going to do that at all. But I like the elephant gimmick. I think it's a good thing. Now, I can only imagine that you are sourcing this food. You are cooking this food. You are making the chapatis. You've got turmeric stuck under your nails. I mean, does everything stink of curry the whole time?
Well, the thing is, I'm lucky because when I bought my apartment here a little bit outside of the, away from the kind of popular districts of Cali a couple of years ago, but I bought it specifically because it had a lot of outside space because I have a big dog, I have a ping pong table, I wanted to build a kitchen, I wanted to have an outside cooking area, I wanted to have a terrace. So I've constructed all this stuff basically, especially around the process of cooking curry. So I've got a chapati making station, I've got all the main cooking areas outside, and of course, pretty much always. So the reason you get those intense curry smells is because it's soaking into the walls, it's soaking into the ceiling. Now, the way the curry house works is I do all the food preparation in my kitchen, in my house, and then I transport all the food to the curry house. Some of it we sell from frozen and some of it we sell from fresh, depending on the rotations. So no, I guess I avoid the curry smell, thank God.
Good. Now, about this house, I recall, because you know, you and I know one another on Facebook, did I see you falling through a roof one of these days?
Well, I mean, a bit later I'm going to tell you a very crazy story that happened just recently at Christmas, but it kind of begins at that point, because about a year and a half ago, when I was in the midst of the constructing of the patio and the kitchen and all that stuff, I also adopted a huge dog. We're not quite sure what he is, but we think he's half Great Dane, half Pit Bull Terrier. But anyway, he's a big Scooby-Doo type dog, very soft, very pathetic. And for the first week or so I had him, he didn't really have a voice. And at one point, I couldn't find him. Long story short, hunting, where is he? Realized the only option was he must have got out where the building work was going on. So I ended up crawling across my roof, finding a hole in the roof with a dog in it, whimpering very quietly in the corner. I jumped through the hole to save the dog, but then I fell through the ceiling of the room below, cut an artery in my heart on the way down. So anyway, I wrapped a tea towel around the artery with some duct tape. I get a very long story, very short. 5 hours later, 4 firemen and a vet's tranquilizer dart, we finally had the dog out of the roof. At that point, I then had to go to the local casualty department to get some stitches in my arm. And that's when I met the guy who lives opposite, who's going to come into this story later. Okay. Who is a very kind but simple gentleman who I've known for a year and a half, who's called Fernando, who I've told at least 50 or 60 times that my name is James, who still calls me John. Yeah. So it's not shocking in the box. But anyway, he very kindly took me on that day to the emergency ward to get my stitches and my tetanus. And that's how I met him and his sister, who I've generally, you know, passed every few days and said hello to. In the year and a half since then, which will lead up to the story, which when the juncture comes, I'll tell you. You now have the background information to that story and the big dog falling through the roof.
Thank you. I'm just chuckling away here, the dog whimpering in a hole in a roof.
Oh, my God. It was the most ridiculous situation. And the fireman said to me, so many times we've rescued cats from trees, but a giant dog from a roof, this is definitely a first.
I love that you're called John. I send tourists in Mompox to one of these places where they make like Corozo wine and fruit wines. And so I stop in quite frequently and my name is Harold. Don't know how it got to Harold. Don't know how he's done it. Richard to Harold. You know, not even Gringo, Harold.
After a point, you just have to accept it though, don't you? It's the classic kind of Rodney, who was it, Trigger and John, Only Fools and Horses. Yeah, just go with it.
But it's gone on so long now, I just feel bad. I just, yeah, it's true. Harold, yeah, Harold sent you.
Yeah, I mean, it must be rude of you to be called Richard.
Yeah. So remind me, I have told your story with not the one with Dania so much. I believe that you guys are friends on Facebook, but I've told your story with Tino Aspria. To a couple of people, especially when you were, I think you had a girlfriend from Barranquilla, and so you didn't hook up during a party, and Tino just couldn't believe it.
He was very disappointed. Yeah, he's extremely disappointed in me. But Tino, it's a while since we've spoken, but he seems to be a bit of a changed character from just seeing his output on social media and stuff. Yeah. I think he's settled down a bit. I think he's maybe his the worst of his carousing days are behind him now. I'd like to think so. Well, he needed to calm down.
Well, he's become Uribista in his old age.
For that, Richard, I'm in no way justifying that, but I'm at least saying conservative, generally speaking.
A friend of mine, his uncle is from Tuluá and was the guy who gave Tino his first pair of football boots. And when he got transferred to Palermo, he flew the uncle out to see him in the game, you know, all expenses as a thank you.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, there are various, he's quite a complicated character. I've had various experiences with him and I have various opinions about him. But the one thing that is constant is he's extremely generous.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, a very likable quality.
Yes. Okay. So now everyone is on tenterhooks. We have to hear the, okay. So you're now called John by your neighbor. You've known him for a year and a half. You sent me a video. You were doing the elephant dance in the video, I think. But you're buck naked. You're going to have to tell us the story behind this.
Right. Well, okay. So there's another tiny bit of background. I had a friend visiting from the UK. He was coming via Miami, and he was very generously bringing for me tikka masala, because whenever anyone comes from the UK, I have to beg them to bring me a few kilograms of spice if they can.
Yeah.
But of course, coming through Miami with a kilogram of brown powder in his in his luggage didn't go well, so he got held up for 24 hours. So eventually when he arrived, it was about 10 o'clock, 24th of December, which in England is Christmas Eve, which in Colombia is a few hours before Christmas, because obviously it begins at midnight on the 24th of December. So I picked him up at the airport. He was a little bit traumatized from the whole journey. He'd obviously been drinking a few gins on the plane. So I took him back to the curry house. We had something to eat. We had a few more gins. We got quite merry and we came back to my house where he was staying the first night of his stay in Colombia. Mm. At this point, I guess it was about 1:30, 2:00 in the morning. And it obviously been celebration in the street, as always, the plastic chairs out, everyone in their family groups playing their music and stuff. And it was winding down. It was a tail end. There was maybe just one speaker left in the street, bit of salsa fading into the background. So my friend, after all his trauma, took himself a few Valiums to knock himself out, because he really hadn't slept for about 3 days, laid himself out on the sofa. I took a Valium and I went to bed. Mm-hmm. Now, I guess by now it was probably about 2:30, 3:00. Now, about 3:30, a new sound system must have been wheeled out into the street, which is now directly opposite my window, about 5 meters away. Yeah. And this one, they're cranking it up, but it's not, you know, the thing is, Richard, I thought I had two rules in life. One was don't fuck with my food. One was don't fuck with my sleep. Now I've had to add don't fuck with my Christmas, because I've always been a Christmasist. And I think if they'd been blasting Ali Jones, Val Dunican, something festive, because bearing in mind, I'm cooking 25th every year. I hold a big traditional British Christmas here. So I invite all the waifs and strays. We cook two turkeys. So I basically had 22, I had the destiny of 22 people's Christmas in my hands at this point. Now it's about 4:00 in the morning and it's this, you can hear it in the video, very loud, very unpleasant techno music vibrating my windows. I'm in a little bit of a daze with the gin and the Valium, tossing and turning in bed, thinking, oh shit, I've got to cook two turkeys in 4 hours for 22 people. And at some stage, I make a snap decision. And that snap decision is to leave the house naked, which I'll get into in a minute, my rationale for that. Go up to the neighbor who I know and say, come on now, it's 4:00 in the morning. Everyone else in the street's asleep. We've all got stuff to do tomorrow. Shall we call it a night? But I can't see the neighbor who I know, Fernando, who calls me John, or his sister. I can just see a guy who seems like he's the kind of head honcho. So I go up to that guy and I say my little piece about Christmas and everyone wants him to sleep. And at that stage, another guy springs up and gets all in my face. Falta respeto, gringo, blah, blah, blah. And he's getting very agitated and excited. And as you can see in the video, there's a kind of face-to-face and a guy comes over and I take a step back and the guy steps up again. And I've been a pacifist, really, mainly, for the past 25, 30 years. It's very unusual for me to be in a violent or aggressive situation. But at the same time, you know, tempers are a little bit flared at this stage. And I give the guy a shove. And he's, to me at the time, it kind of looked in slow motion. But having seen the video in the police station since, I now know it wasn't slow motion. But he kind of wheeled back in what seemed to me in a Charlie Chaplin-esque way. And hits a plant pot or a large kind of small wall around a small tree. And he kind of went arse over tit. So he ended up with his feet sticking up in the air. Now, over the years, I've given that shove a few times because there have been a few, you know, touch and go moments. And yeah, it's always been quite effective. There's never been any need to continue things after that shove.
Yeah.
Because I'm a farm boy, you know, from 10 to 18, I was working on the farm. So I'm a pretty strong individual. So when I give you a shove, you definitely know you've been shoved, as did this guy. But anyway, he flew back and we ended up having what is essentially a street brawl, which a couple of his mates ended up joining in on. And as things turned out, I'm actually very good at fighting. I hadn't tested that for a while, but it turned out I did pretty well. So I ended up back by my front door with another punch loaded, saying, does anyone else want one of these? And the general opinion was no, thank you very much. So I went back in my house, put a towel around myself. My friend was like, what the hell is going on? So I started trying to explain to him that I was in this random naked street brawl outside. At which point one of them kung fu kicked my front door open. So I tore downstairs again, at which point my towel flew off. And this is when I made my grave tactical error. I effected a naked rugby tackle on two of them, which took all the skin off my elbows, off my knees, off my feet. It was a very effective move, but a bit of a disaster for my personal well-being. And at this point, the police arrived. Now, I'm gonna rewind a little bit here because once we get into the police section, that's a very, very long second section of the story. So I'm going to take a breather and I'm going to go back to why I went out of the house naked in the first place. I mean, obviously I was asleep naked. I was intending to return to sleep naked and I possibly wasn't in my most advanced decision-making capacity. But also I've been in Colombia 10 years. I've been in this situation a lot of times, especially in Cali. And I want to talk to you later about the nature of noise terrorism and acceptance of other people's noise in Colombia.
Right.
But in my experience, if I go out fully dressed and I say in my funny accent, can you please turn the music down? Por favor, escuchame, quiero dormir.
Mm.
It's more probable they're just going to laugh at my accent than it's going to have any reaction at all. So for a few years now, generally when I've been in this problem, I go out in my pants and one other occasion previously to be naked. Because if you go out just in your pants, you get people's attention pretty quickly. It takes 5 or 6 minutes, but you get people's attention. You go out naked, you get their attention immediately, and immediately you've got a discussion going on. So it's kind of a passive-aggressive action, I understand that. But it's also like saying, this is a serious situation.
Mm.
But at the same time, I'm naked. I've got no shoes on. I've got no concealed weapons. I'm obviously not looking for a fight. I'm looking for, I don't want to hear your loud music. You don't want to see me naked. Let's call it quits.
Yeah.
So that's where we got up to when the police arrived.
Okay.
At that point, I'm just going to take a breather because it's a long story.
I can see the logic. I can see the logic behind the naked thing. But I've got too much... family, let's say, extended family and Mompos to be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I am able to live by my own rules and not really have anyone else to answer to. So I guess that does allow me to do more lunatic things of this nature.
Sure.
But anyway, hang on, let me just grab, I'm just going to grab some water and I'm going to come back and tell you the second part. One second.
No problem. of course, Jim Davies there telling us a little bit about his colourful life, let's say, in Cali. And he'll be back very shortly now to tell us he's refreshing his throat to get into the next section of this very amusing story.
Okay, so at this point, the police arrive.
Yes.
So now it's about 4:30 in the morning. So the first thing they say is, will you please get dressed? Very reasonable request, and I do get dressed. I put some shorts and a t-shirt on. And then they say, put some shoes on. And I say, well, have you seen my feet? They're like ripped to shreds. There's no way I'm going to put shoes on those. Plus, it's Christmas in 3.5 hours, and I'm cooking 2 turkeys for 22 people. So there's no way I'm leaving the house. You know, I've gone this far for Christmas. I'm definitely not going to now fall at the final hurdle and get arrested.
Yep.
At this point, the police say, well, it's for your own protection. And I say, well, I think I'm going to be okay. Plus, I'm not alone. There's another gringo upstairs who just arrived, has taken 3 Valium, and doesn't speak any English. So you're going to need an ambulance to take him to the police station. Then you're going to need a translator for when he comes around. So I'm being pretty, I'm being a pain in the ass, basically.
Yeah.
And at this point, the heavens open. A big tropical storm begins. Now, I'm not inviting the police in. So they're now getting soaked on my doorstep. I'm being an arrogant prick and refusing to put shoes on. They're realizing they've got this other gringo asleep upstairs. And now my big, pathetic Scooby-Doo dog, because he's scared of the rain, starts crying like crazy. So there's this complete pantomime going on. So they say, fuck this. So they say, we're going to come back in 2 days. Mm-hmm. So in 2 days, they come back and they give me a piece of paper, which is a letter saying I've got to go to the police station for reconciliation with my neighbor. Yeah. My neighbor wants to lodge these various complaints about me. So 2 days later, I turn up at the local police station. But being gringo, obviously, I turn up 15 minutes before the appointment. And a little short fat Colombian policeman comes up to me outside and he says, ¿Eres francés? And I say, no, yo soy inglés. And he says, ¿Cómo? And I say, well, it's in Europe, it's near France. And he's like, really? And he gets his phone out and he starts showing me, this is what you've been waiting for, Richard. And he starts showing me all these photos of the French Foreign Legion. And he says, I'm 38. I've always wanted to join the French Foreign Legion. The entrance limit is 40 years old.
Oh, my God.
Can you help me? Now, obviously, I don't know a lot about the French Foreign Legion, but I'm skimming through all the memory files right now. And I remember that there's a charity here called, Alliance Française.
Yeah, Alliance Française.
So I ask him if he's heard of the charity, because it's like a bridge between Colombia and France. And now he's getting really excited. He's taking my WhatsApp number. He's giving me his WhatsApp number. He's saying, will you help me? Will you come to the interview with me? Will you fill out forms with me? So I'm saying, well, I don't speak French, but yes, I definitely will, because I've got a little problem here that I thought you might be able to help me with. Because leaving the house naked, apparently, is an 825,000 peso more than that. Plus, I've got this whole situation of this naked fight with my neighbours on Christmas morning. And he says, no problem, leave it with me. So I say, great. And at this stage, the neighbour, the main first guy that I had the fight with, arrives with his aunt, and we all go into the interview room together. But they're waving around this bloody memory card, which I, at that point, don't know what is, but very soon find out is a video of the first 20 seconds of the whole kerfuffle that had happened previously. So the reconciliation officer, the aunt, and the guy I had to fight with are now sitting on one side of the computer screen watching the video, but I'm sitting behind it. So all I can see is what's registering on the policewoman's face as she watches it. And her face is quite animated as she's watching it. And then they start talking about bits of it. And then I'm like, well, can I see this bloody video, please? And eventually the aunt passes me her phone and I get to see it. And I'm like, wow, gave me down. So now we've got this situation. Now, this guy's got all his receipts for a broken phone screen, a twisted ankle, his friend's black eye, and a torn T-shirt he wants me to pay the bills for. And I'm saying, well, I'll give you 1,000 apologies, and I'll give you the same value in pesos, 1,000, because as far as I'm concerned, all the aggression came towards me, and really what I was doing was self-defense. There's a bit of a standoff at this point, and then there's a knock on the door. And lo and behold, it's the short, fat policeman who I was speaking to outside in the first place. And he says to the reconciliation officer, there's an emergency. Can you come outside, please? She goes outside. They have a 5-minute chat. She comes back in. And she's already kind of leaning towards my side, I felt anyway. But after that, there's kind of a very strong leaning towards my side. And she's really putting the guy off. And she's saying, the way you had your face leaning into him and you kept stepping towards him was intimidation. And there was obviously going to be some kind of physical response. It seems to be a 50-50. I don't really think that the gringo has any reason to pay for your stuff. But if you want to file a report, you can come back in 8 hours. So she was making life very difficult for
him. Yeah.
Anyway, long story short, we didn't come to a reconciliation. And we both left, and he was going to go back 8 hours later to file his personal charges.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, we had to go back in 2 days to meet the chief superintendente. I get stuck between the two languages of Cali.
Yeah.
And I got home, and now I'm thinking, well, everyone's got this bloody video. The police have got it. The neighbors have got it. Everyone's got this video apart from me, and I want this. This could, you know, yeah. There's all kinds of reasons I want the video, yeah. But as much as anything, just for my own, you know, self-respect.
Send it to your mum.
So I just say, you know what? Enough is enough. I go knock on the door. I ask to speak to Matteo, who's the neighbour, and the neighbour comes to the door. And I say, look, I was a bit rash to say I wouldn't give you any money in the police station. I think it's reasonable that I pay for a new screen for your phone, even though perhaps it did get broken while you were kung fu kicking my door open. Who knows at what stage that happened? But, you know, it's a new year. Let's all start in love and peace. I'll pay for your phone. Basically, that was it. I paid for your phone. We go to the police station together. We tell them they're friends. And then I casually threw in, oh, yeah, and you give me a copy of the video. So all of that happened. Me and Matteo became friends. We've been on a few dog walks. We've been various times to the police station. And then we had to go eventually to go and see the chief superintendente. There were two more signings I've had to do with the chief superintendente and then another, which I did yesterday with Interpol. That's crazy.
Interpol.
Day for the final sign off. Now, I'm saying to Matteo on the way there, because we've already met this guy, and he's like, I don't know if you remember Cobretti, this Sylvester Stallone character. Uh-huh. He's a big, hard bastard with no uniform and various weapons stashed around his person. That much I've attained from the first meeting.
Uh-huh.
So going for the second meeting, I'm saying to Matteo, if this guy tells you to leave the office, under no circumstances leave, because I think he's going to ask me to pass some money under the counter.
Yeah.
We get about halfway through the meeting with me, Matteo, the reconciliation officer, and the chief super. And he says to Matteo, Chico, Matteo's not a chico, Matteo's like 30 years old.
Yeah.
Chico, necesito una copia de este papel. So he basically sends Matteo to the photocopy shop over the road.
Yeah.
And he says to the other officer, so he doesn't get lost, can you go with him? So now it's just me and the chief super in the room. And I'm thinking, oh, shit, this is the moment. And he looks me in the eye and he says, hey, chistoso el video, no? And I say, pues, because, you know, what do you say? And obviously I throw in 20% discount for the police.
Yeah.
I've subsequently invited him and his wife for a free meal. Because after that, he writes down his number on a piece of paper, hands it to me and says, if you have any other troubles in Cali, you call me immediately.
Nice.
And then Matteo and the other officer come back into the room and he writes down the official report for us to sign, which says Matteo was making an unreasonable amount of noise in the street. James left in his briefs. There was a loud discussion. End of report.
Nice.
So the report is, you know, very, very favorable. It describes the circumstances favorably, let's say. Now, at some point, I think it must have been the first time that I met the chief super, I was desperately trying to find a way to chat him up. So at some stage I said, you know, I'm single. I'd really like to meet a good, responsible, dependable women. Where did the off-duty police officers go?
Okay.
And I guess I was I am single. I would like to meet her. I'm quite curious about dating a Colombian police officer. So, but anyway, it was kind of a way in as well. So subsequently to that, we'd have the conversation. And then recently I phoned him and said, look, why don't you and your wife come for a free meal? I really appreciate all the help you've given me. It'd be great to get to know you better. And he said, yes, definitely. But better than that, I'm going to bring my cuñada with me because I think she'd be a great potential girlfriend for you.
Perfect.
So, cuñada.
Yeah.
And if I don't fancy dating, I'm going to put myself in a potentially quite dangerous situation. So that's going to happen. Next week, I'm going to the Alliance Française with the short fat first officer to get a legion. Then I'm going to marry the chief superintendent's daughter, and then the whole story, Cunyada, and then the whole story's over. So there you go. In a nutshell.
2020 is just just starting. I mean, I don't know how you're going to fit anything else into this year.
Oh, Richard, I mean, to be honest, it's awoken. I'm actually no longer calling myself Jim Davis. I'm calling myself James Peligroso. I think Colombia needs a superhero, and this is what I hinted at earlier, to address this situation of noise terrorism and noise pollution, because all of the neighbors, all the old ladies around, the tías and the abuelas, they know what happened. They call it El Escándalo. And they come and they pat me on the back talking about El Escándalo. And they say, gracias a Dios, a las cinco, por fin, duerme. They're just so happy to get some sleep, because it's not in the Colombian culture to complain about things. And there's two reasons for that. One, because it's just not, because they're very humble, respectful people. Mm. And two, because there's a fear left, a Pablo Escobar hangover about people getting killed for complaining about the neighbors being noisy and stuff. And I've been complaining in Colombia for 10 years and I haven't been killed. So I think there's a large section of people that want to have a discussion about what's acceptable noise-wise and what isn't. And the reason I talk about James Peligroso is because somebody parked outside my restaurant a couple of days ago, one of the musicians playing in the Cafe Macondo, opposite. And he had his car alarm very sensitive. So every time a moped went past, it went off. So that's about every 25 seconds in San Antonio.
Yeah.
So I went in once politely and I asked, can he do something about the sensitivity of his alarm? Because we've been listening to it for like 3 hours and we haven't got any clients and it sounds like a war zone. Mm. And then nothing happens. And then I put some post-it notes and I put his windscreen wipers up saying selfish. And I wrote, please turn your alarm down in the dirt on his windscreen. And then I went home for my break. And then I came back and still nothing had happened. So I went in again and I said, is the manager there? Is there someone in charge I can speak to? And they said no. And then I went to speak to the waitresses. And it was just obvious. It was, everyone was being made insane by this noise that was going on and on and on. Mm. And the waitresses said to me, oh, the guy came in and he said he's not going to do anything about it because it's a public space. And that was the point when James Peligroso was born. Because what I did at that point was threw the tablecloth I was in the middle of folding up onto the floor, launched into the middle of Macondo restaurant, which had about 70 people listening to dinner jazz.
Yeah.
And I started going, for about 2 minutes. Until everyone in the restaurant was looking at me. And then finally somebody who was in charge came up. And I said, are you relaxed? And they said, no, I'm not relaxed. And I said, well, no, nor are we. We've been listening to this alarm for 7 or 8 hours now. Please tell a musician that I'm going to go and buy a dozen eggs. And every time the alarm goes off from now on, I'm going to throw an egg at his car. And when I get a dozen eggs, I don't know what I'm going to do, but tell him my name is James Peligroso and I'm the famous YouTube naked street fighter if he's wondering who to come and speak to. So anyway, 5 minutes later, these three musicians with bloody ironic moustaches come out of there and lo and behold, get on their knees and they turn down the sensitivity and no more problem.
Yeah.
And they start saying this thing to me again about public space. And I say to them, there's two types of people, part of the solution and part of the problem. No one wants to hear your car alarm. If someone wants to rob your car, they're going to rob it in 1 minute. If someone wants to break your windows and steal your stuff, after your car alarm's already gone off 200 times, no one's going to give a shit. No one's going to take any notice. So all you're doing is irritating everyone in this public space and allowing nobody else to use it because your oh-so-important car is parked there. And philosophically, you didn't really have a response to that. So car alarms is part of my noise pollution campaign, but it's, you know, it's multifaceted, Richard. I mean, I believe you had some problems with
I've always had problems.
Vallenato stands outside your place, right?
Awful. Two Vallenato kiosks who hate one another, so they have dueling Vallenato. Oh, it's just if you could just imagine that hard pushed accordion blaring at one another. No, it's just noise.
To such a cheap sound system as well. It doesn't add value to it.
Awful.
But my point is, where does it end? That's the thing. Right. So, for example, they're battling. Let's say they start buying bigger and bigger sound systems, competing that way. Yeah. You know, there's no cutoff point. There's no, the shit stops here. It's just like Columbia just gets noisier and noisier and noisier and more different clashing sound systems. I mean, Cali's probably worse than most places.
Well, the Costa, you know, the Costa.
But, you know, many's a time when I've been with my mum here or something, we've just been in a nice hotel and we're really relaxed by the pool and everything's perfect.
Yeah.
And then suddenly they wheel out that bloody furry speaker and it all goes tits up. And I know there's so many Colombians that feel the same way because people say things to me all the time about it, yeah, but they still are amazed when I complain about it. So I don't know where the national mentality says the cutoff point is, if it even exists.
Well, see, I don't know. I have dreams about the power going out, you know, or dreams about cutting their power lines with shears and stuff. And when the power does go out, which it does fairly frequently, and I've got my, it feels quite cool to turn on my, planta, which is really, really noisy. But then I put it in the street so it points at them, you know, so that my guests can have their fans on.
That's the other thing. It's like, point the bloody speaker at yourself. Yes. Don't point it at them. That's what amazed, like, why are you just pointing it out into the street at my house? Point it into your house. That would make a lot more sense.
Yeah, well, they
don't. I mean, when they had the parols here and all the political anti-government protests in December, and everyone was putting the videos on Facebook and the private condominiums and stuff, and all that. Baseball bats, and you know, we both know there's a whole story behind that, which we haven't got time to go into today. But my point is, in my barrio, because it's, as I said, I'm the only Estadan head or here, it's quite a poor barrio, it was heaven. It was, I don't know where they were, I don't know what they were doing, but there wasn't a single person here. It was, I could hear it for the first time in 10 years. It was more or less the day of my 10 year anniversary. And I think it was the first time I heard a pin drop. It was possibly one of my happiest days.
I don't know about the sound thing. I mean, it's something I can't get my head around. And I know that people don't like it in the kiosks in front of my place, because even these are Colombians, they'll pick up the Remax table, of course, you know, very nice, Remax table and chairs, and then drag them all the way to the limits of where they can to sit down and still be served in the bar. And you're like, well, of course, they don't want to sit next to the speaker. But anyway, and then I talk to the owner and I say, listen, turn it down and all my Germans will go there because I'll tell them it's a beer garden. And they're like, no, we have it up so that everyone knows we're open. I'm like, you're never shut.
I mean, do you have the ice cream?
Beedy, 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 beedy.
No, but they come with bells. And they sit outside my house because I've got a four-year-old, you know, and they'll come from 9 o'clock until I told them off. I said, if any one of you comes back before 11 or one, then there's going to be problems.
No, I mean, we've got this one called Panaderia Paula, and they come around every morning, and they play like the jingle from the radio. I'm not even going to sing it. It's so fucking horrendous. They do this big beeping thing. And I accept it. But then one Sunday, he just parked it outside my house at 8 o'clock in the morning and just left it on a loop. I think he'd gone for a coffee somewhere, just left it on a loop. I went down and I said, if you ever do that again, I am going to get the hosepipe out and I'm going to soak you to your skin.
Well, listen, unfortunately, Jim, we don't have enough time to fill up all of your different adventures and misadventures.
I'm just starting on my gripes.
We can do that another week. I'm in my 40s.
But I should say, I do love Colombia. I love Colombians. I love living here. You know, but there's always going to be some cultural clashes.
Of course.
I like to keep my Englishness, and all of this being a miserable old bastard is part of being English, you know?
Yes. Yes. I'm in my 40s. I'm a miserable old man. And I like to be that way. It's part of my culture. Respect it.
And I think, you know, we've all got something to learn from each other. You know, I've definitely, in some ways, loosened up since I've been in Colombia, and in other ways I think I've helped people, you know, like I mentioned before, like this whole question of customer service. There's a difference between good customer service and ass kissing. And what people tend to do, here's un plazo para servirte, all of this, but yeah, there'll be empty cans on the table, someone will say they didn't enjoy their food, but they'll still be expected to pay for it. So, you know, I'm really trying to teach not only my staff, but also like impress my customers with what real customer service is, how subtle it is. And when it's working well, you don't even notice it's happening. That afterwards you realize you had a really nice, relaxing time. So, you know, there's a lot of ways these culture clashes benefit us as well as agitate us.
Of course. Now, well, we have to close up now, but everyone heading through Cali, heading to Cali, in Cali, we're recommending here the Cali Curry House. It's been more than a decade since I was in Cali. I really need to get down there soon, and I want to have a curry at your
place. See the naked chef. Always get an open-armed welcome.
The elephant dance. So anyway, we're done enough. Thank you so much, Jim Davies.
Richard, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. James El Peligroso, there in the barrio in San Antonio, and Aranjuez there in Cali. Go to his curry house, the Cali Curry House. I believe it's opposite the Macondo Bar in San Antonio. Definitely on Facebook and so on. So we'll post that on the Columbia Calling Facebook site and stuff. You'll be able to find it. And of course, when he has corrected somewhat the video of the naked brawl, we will put that up too, so that we can promote the Cali Curry House and the elephant dance here on the Columbia Calling.
No podcast. Such thing as bad publicity.
All right, very good. Thank you again, Jim Davies. This has been episode 308 of the Columbia Calling podcast. I've been your host, Richard McCall. It's been an incredibly amusing episode. I know you've all enjoyed it out there. This week we'll be talking to more people discussing Columbia related conversational and interesting stuff. So thank you again and goodbye.